At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
We are back. College football season is finally here. And of course, what that means, we bring back Stack in the Box College Football Edition. I'm your host, Reed Wall, joined as always by my co-host, Cody Williams. Cody, it's been a few months. We did a little NFL draft thing in between, but really this is our first time getting back in the saddle. How's it going, man? Well, happy season to you.
Dude, happy season to you, man. I think we're both just so pumped, man. It's just good to have college football back in our lives. We got a little appetizer with week zero and already got some chaos going down in Ireland. So, I mean, it's the best time of year. We've got 12 weeks just ahead of just nonstop action, man.
Yeah, I mean, we're back in the swing of things. We already had an upset. We had two near massive upsets as well in week zero. And now we turn our page to our first full slate. But before we get into the games and the bets and everything and the picks, I mean, this is a pretty transformational year in college football, I'd say. The most, I would say, in recent memory since I think either of us have been alive.
Yeah.
We have some big players moving conferences. We have some the expansion of the playoff tripling in size going from 4 to 12. So there's a lot to chew on here, Cody. So before we get to any of our like expanded thoughts, one macro thing you are most excited to see this season that's a little bit different than maybe it was in the past?
Yeah, so I think, honestly, week zero is a good indication of this, but losses don't necessarily matter as much. Like, we've in the 14 playoff era, we've talked about it, and it's been like, okay, if this team slips up, you know, they're done. If you look at Florida State slipping up, they're not done in this college football playoff race. Like, they could still very conceivably win the ACC. Now, after what I saw on Saturday, am I convinced of that? No, but like, in theory, they are not eliminated from the college football playoff. They can still get that automatic qualifier berth and not just make the college football playoff, but be a top four seed. So, like, that is still very much on the table. So, I know it may sound counterintuitive to say that losses not mattering as much mean like it's something that's exciting to me, but it is like knowing that a team isn't automatically eliminated because of one loss. That's something that's exciting to me, and I think is going to carry out throughout the entire season.
Yeah, I liked everyone tweeting after the game like, well, Florida State's not done yet. They could still make the playoff. I'm like, they can, but did you watch the game? They happen to look terrible
exactly
after the first drive. So yeah, it is something that they aren't done, but they kind of look a little done. They definitely looked a little bit more 8-4-ish than 10-2-ish, I would say. So
exactly.
Your point is well taken, though. I will say that the losses, you lose one in the old age, it was just last year, but you lose one, you're already kind of up against it. Now you could lose two and you're still in pretty good shape, I would say. If you go 10-2, obviously you need the schedule to support it. If we're talking like SEC and Big Ten teams, if you go 10-2, you are, I'd say, more likely than not making the college football playoff. ACC and Big 12, maybe not so much, but at least you're in the mix. So I agree with you there. I would say what I'm interested for is this helmet communication and how the offenses are going to change. Because the one that really stuck out to me, and we're talking Florida State again, was the DJU was just like, it felt like he was listening to his coach. You have until 15 seconds now with to speak to your coach or the coordinator. And even Haynes King, he was like his holding like this. Like, I wonder how much that's going to impact the games, both game state and game flow. It should be pretty interesting. So that was one thing I noticed, Florida State moving very methodically, really making sure they were precise in what they were going to run. I wonder if maybe it was the first game transfer quarterback, and maybe as they get into more rhythm, maybe that eases up. But it did feel like there was a lot of, is it almost like backseat? Like, I know it's headset coaching, but like almost like backseat coaching, where they were really in their quarterback's ears, making sure they were making the right calls. Did you notice anything about the new communication systems in college football?
Yeah, one thing I thought was super interesting was, and a team I actually thought would benefit from this was SMU, and their offense looked horrible as they did the two quarterback system. And so I wonder, like, if it's very dependent on quarterback, if how we're going to see this work, because you talk about DJU like very intently listening to it. I think that might be a DJU thing, man. Like, I just think DJU just ain't it at this point. We pretty clearly know that. And so, like, really relaying that information. But like, you look at guys like Carson Beck or Quinn Ewers, or guys who have a ton of experience and are on the upper echelon of quarterback play in college football this year. I do wonder what it looks like for those guys, because we haven't seen it necessarily for those guys yet. And so I do wonder what that's going to look like for them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it may even mean more about who the coach is. Mm-hmm. I think depending on how they scheme up their plays, maybe if it's a quarterback whisperer type, like maybe they're really going to kind of keep the training wheels on their quarterback and say, hey, like, we're going here on this play. Like, if they're going to, if the safety's going to come down, we're taking the shot over the top, you know, really kind of spoon feed it to their quarterback. I think it's an interesting subplot and wrinkle into this season. But I alluded to it earlier. We have a new college football playoff format. We have 12 teams making it. So there are odds on this. I'm interested how this market's going to develop over the season, given what we just said, that you can lose a game and still conceivably be in it. I'm looking right now at a sports book to make the college football playoff. And Florida State, who is around like evenish money, plus 120 mm-hmm. to make the playoff, they drop all the way plus 360. I wonder how much you're going to see throughout the year, how these teams really move throughout. So, Cody, before we get to the picks for week one, I want your best bet for one team to make the college football playoff. It could be anybody, but try and make something a little appetizing for our viewers.
Yeah, I tried my best to do this. I've got Boise State at plus 400 on FanDuel to make the college football playoff. And the group of five market is the one where I think there is the most value if you really believe in a team. I happen to believe in Boise State in the Mountain West more so than I do other G5 leagues. I think Sun Belt is probably the deepest G5 league, but I think that's actually going to be disadvantageous, because the way this is going to work is the G5 automatic qualifier is going to be the highest ranked team. I think the Sun Belt is going to beat each other up. Liberty, I think, playing in CUSA is just not going to have the strength of schedule to climb up in the rankings. Boise State, on the other hand, I'm high on the Mountain West this year. I think we saw in week zero that the Mountain West might be a little bit better than we expected, particularly at the bottom with teams like Nevada and New Mexico putting up a better fight than we expected. So I think that Boise State is still the class of that conference. I think they're going to run away from it behind Ashton Jeanty. They have an identity. Spencer Danielson taking over maintains some semblance of continuity there. So I am high on Boise State. Very much so. And I think getting them at plus 400, I think they have one of the clearer paths for a G5 team to make the playoff.
Yeah. I mean, listen, they're the short shot to win the Mountain West at minus 120. So tough to look past it. I am curious to see how this quarterback situation is going to go for them, given that they had the five-star transfer from USC, Malachi Nelson. He was beat out by Mad Dog Madsen. We'll see how that works out for Boise State. I think what's also worth noting with Boise State's path is they play Oregon in, I believe it's week three. Mm-hmm. They're going to lose by a lot of points in that game. I wonder, Oregon is a very, very likely playoff team. When we get to the end of the season and tie goes to this team, I wonder how Boise State's going to be viewed if they, you know, get boat raced by Oregon and then it's time to say, all right, well, they're about to play, you know, Boise is going to be the 12 seed. They're going to play a 5 seed. Let's say it's Oregon or Ohio State. How's it going to go? Like, are they really going to be the best choice? So I think it's interesting. I think Boise State's path is pretty clear, but I think that's a tie break that can maybe come into play.
My pushback with that is, at least in my estimation, Liberty is the like, it's Liberty and Boise State are the two best G5 teams to me. And like, there is a little bit of, you know, some other contenders. Like, I think Texas State's very good. App State is going to be good again. Memphis is going to be good out of the AAC. But like, we saw what happened to Liberty against Oregon in the bowl season last year. So like, I think that's something that might not be weighed quite as heavily. I think they're just literally going to look for the best G5 team. At least that's what I'm hoping for by making Boise State my best bet for the college football playoff.
Yeah, no, I went in a little different direction for this, though. Still a relative long shot, but I took Texas A&M +240 to make the playoff. And a lot, and this was a team on my radar in the summer. You know, I liked what they did. I liked the Elko hire. I liked getting Colin Klein from Kansas State. But it wasn't like I was jumping to make the playoff thoughts. I said it's possible, but I wasn't really jumping at the to get involved. But then Notre Dame – in the fall camp, they lose their starting left tackle, Charles Jagusa. Now, look, usually you lose your left tackle. It hurts, but it's not so bad. This is a Notre Dame team that typically is an offensive line factory. That being said, they are now that much more likely to struggle in their first game at A&M this Saturday, which we're going to talk about in a little bit and give out some bets for it. But to me, A&M's schedule is pretty straightforward. They're in the tough SEC, so 10-2 gets them in. Their four toughest games come at home, and their road schedule's pretty favorable, I'd say. They play four teams. I'd say two of them are probably not making a bowl game, two maybe making a bowl game. They go at Florida, at Miss State, at South Carolina, at Auburn. To me, it's the home games, though, that really will determine their season, and they're home Notre Dame, home Missouri, home LSU, and home Texas. So their four toughest games are going to be at home. They're now that much more likely to beat Notre Dame. Aren't they that much more likely to make the college football playoff? And if they are to win on Saturday at home against Notre Dame, where they went from a pick'em to a -3, aren't they going to go from +240 to make the playoff to, I don't know, +130 on Saturday night, like late Saturday night? Like, this is a team that the path is pretty clear. Go 3-1 at home. Give yourself even another loss on the road in SEC play, which is always difficult. Go 10-2. I think you're pretty firmly in. I think you're in with some space to go. So +240 to me is something I jumped at. Excuse me. And I think it really revolves around Notre Dame being that, or them being that much more likely to beat Notre Dame on Saturday. So what do you think about that, Cody?
No, I like it a lot. To me, this is honestly just a bet on Connor Wegman. Because I think that one thing that people are underrating with Mike Elko coming back is that this defense, even though they lost guys like Walter Nolan and a bunch of other guys in the transfer portal, this defense is still going to be damn good, man. And like, I think it's really, can Connor Wegman stay healthy? Can Colin Klein get the most that we've seen out of Connor Wegman when he is healthy? And I have a full faith in Colin Klein being able to do that. The health is the only thing that would scare me, but I think at +240, that's a bet well worth taking.
Yeah, I just think that the path is pretty clear. I like the schedule, how it sets up. I just think, it, like, for Boise, and again, it's longer odds, but you need to almost, like, you need to have some things break your way. This one, like, I think A&M controls their own destiny. Obviously, you have to go out and win the games, but, like, I think it's pretty clear what it is. It's do this, you're in. Boise, it's still like, well, if, like, you're good enough and, like, things kind of break your way, that's where I was thinking when I was going through this exercise.
No, I think the G5 market is – there's more volatility because you're dealing with five conferences that you have to, like, you know, navigate to figure out who's going to be the G5 representative. Because I think we would both agree that the G5 is only getting one team in the college football playoff, exactly, even expanded to 12 teams. So, like, I fully understand that. But I think, like, the way I want to attack the college football playoff market in terms of the G5 is just throw a couple darts at, like, one or two or three teams. Like, throw one at Boise State, throw one at Texas State, throw one at Liberty, and just, if one of those hits, you're still in profit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Bonus bet. I like Texas State to be the G5 playoff bid, but that's besides the point.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Let's get to the games on starting all weekend. But we have plenty of games. We have absolute bangers all weekend long, starting on Thursday, handful on Friday, and then obviously a pretty hefty card on Saturday. So we're going to, and then we have two bonus games on Sunday and Monday for Labor Day. So we have a lot of games we want to get to. We have six picks each. I don't have the record from last year, Cody. Do you mind refreshing me who won the pick'em between us last year? I forgot.
I believe it was you by a hair. I think we ended up making it close to there towards the end. But yeah, it was you. I think you definitely remember that, if I'm being honest with you.
No, I forgot. So thank you for reminding me. I need to listen, you're only as good as your next pick. So we keep it moving here. We'll see if I can make it two in a row. And let's start with, I don't know if it's the biggest game of the weekend, but it sure is going to be the one with the most eyeballs for a myriad of reasons. And that's Georgia and Clemson playing at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia, basically their satellite stadium. Georgia is a 13.5-point favorite. The total set at 49. Before I turn it over to you, Cody, just a little bit of background on the game. Of course, Clemson coming off a real down season. And you look at how this season might shake out for Clemson. This obviously is a non-conference game. But the ACC now looks maybe a little bit weaker than was to be expected. Florida State obviously losing. Clemson now is the favorite to win the ACC. So this could be a real, I'm not saying beat Georgia, but they could really announce themselves as, hey, like we're like looking good for playoff and we're going to try to build towards something. I know last year didn't go their way, but if Cade Klubnik could get a little bit more acclimated with a new set of receivers, maybe this is a coming out party of sorts for Clemson, even if they lose. If they are to maybe overperform, maybe this starts to look like a Clemson team that maybe it's that national title, but maybe it's, you know, win a playoff game or something and maybe look more like the Clemson of old. On the Georgia side, it's business as usual, right? They were arguably the best team in the country, definitely the second best, if not the best. Last year, they lose to Alabama in the SEC title game. Their three-peat bid is stopped. We'll see if it's a redeem team setup, but some questions about running back availability. Trevor Etienne, the Florida transfer, he is possibly suspended for this game. And their backup running back, Robinson, also banged up. So it's always running back by committee for the Dogs, but they might be coming in a bit shorthanded against a good Clemson defense. So some interesting subplots to this game. Again, Georgia laying near two touchdowns. How do you see it, Cody?
Yeah, I've got Georgia minus 13.5 as my best bet for this game. Look, I understand the running back questions, but I have a ton of faith in Carson Beck. I have a ton of faith in this passing offense. They've really loaded up at receiver over the past couple of years quietly. Dominic Lovett, I think, is going to have a big game, especially when you look at this Clemson defense. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a Clemson hater. I pushed back on your Cade Klubnik love last year. And you were quite wrong there. I was vindicated there. And I just don't see it. Like, I think Cade Klubnik is a fine quarterback, but I don't think he is the five-star that he was billed at coming into Clemson. Like, I don't think he's the second coming of Trevor Lawrence or Deshaun Watson or any of those guys. I think Garrett Riley, frankly, might be a little bit overrated as well. So I'm worried about this Clemson offense coalescing early, especially against obviously it's Georgia. It's a talented Georgia defense. Like, that's not breaking news here. So like, I worry about Clemson being able to move the ball in this game. And I think Georgia is just going to have their way. This is an experienced offensive line, even after losing to Amarius Mims, because let's be frank about it. Amarius Mims didn't play a whole lot last year because he was banged up. So like, that just allowed other guys to get more experience, and they're returning a lot of those guys. I think that Oscar Delp is going to absolutely just slot in for what Brock Bowers did in this offense. I just think Georgia is head and shoulders. I think there's tiers to this when you look at the rankings. I know it's only 13 spots separating them in the rankings, but I think they are definitely a tier below. Clemson is a tier below what Georgia is. And so I have Georgia covering this at two touchdowns.
Yeah, I went back and forth with Georgia total. I ended up on the under 49 for a few reasons. And the more I think about the game, is it that like this looks a little bit like Georgia – Oregon a few years ago, where they absolutely destroy a really, really good Oregon team, like 45-3 or something. I can see it. Like if Georgia comes out firing, I do respect Clemson's defense though. And I do think that if you go back just a few years ago, and I know there's a lot of changes and you can't equate what happened now 3 years ago to what happened, you know, what's going to happen on Saturday.
Right.
Georgia and Clemson played the opening game in 2021. Georgia won 10-3, and the only touchdown was a pick six. And I'm not saying that the two teams are even close to similar anymore, but I think that shows, though, almost how Kirby Smart's going to approach this game. I know that the running back room might be a bit shorthanded. I know Carson Beck, in my opinion, is the top quarterback recruit in the country. I don't know if this is going to be a sling it around the yard type game. I think that Clemson's defense warrants a little bit of respect. This is a young emerging Clemson defense that, I mean, I know the offense had its struggles, but this is a Clemson defense that checked in 11th in EPA per play last year. So I do think Georgia is going to take a pretty, definitely early, is going to take a cautious approach to this game. And maybe I'm going to kick myself for not taking first half under because maybe the game script gets a little loose late. But I believe that Clemson's offense, even if it does improve, and I do think it will be better than last year, this is a team that was still like 91st in yards per play and EPA per play. They could, outside the top 100 in EPA per pass, the offensive line was still shaky, 75th in tackles for loss allowed. You're playing Georgia. Even if your offense gets better, this is like the worst. This is the worst team you're going to face in a week one coming out party. So I do think Clemson can acquit itself nicely, even in a blowout loss. Maybe it's a little bit like competitive, like Georgia. Maybe their defense, maybe Clemson's defense shows out a little bit. And this is like 27-10, 27-7, something like that. I just feel like there's more avenues to this game being lower scoring than a surefire blowout. Just given some of the questions on the Georgia side, and maybe Clemson's offense does look a little bit better. And this game is played, you know, 27-20, something like that. So I ended up on the under. Maybe it's more first half under, but yeah. So I ended up on the under, but I do think, I don't know. I could see the result going in plenty of different ways, whether it's like a competitive game, really, really tight lipped, or maybe Georgia just steamrolls them and like this starts the revenge campaign.
Yeah, I honestly think we see the game the exact same way, because like my projected score for this is 27-10. So like that's what I'm seeing this game as. Like Georgia just has too much for Clemson to handle. And I don't have enough faith in Clemson's offense based on what I saw last year, based on the fact that, you know, Dabo Swinney refuses to go into the portal and get an offensive lineman to help a unit that's been struggling for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. Like, I just have a lot of questions about what that offense is going to be capable of against a team like Georgia. So like, whereas yes, there are questions about Georgia, I don't think it's going to be like the Oregon game where they blow them out by 40 points, but I do think it is going to be a pretty comfortable victory for Georgia. But I think the under 49, like I think there's a good chance we don't get close to that. Like, I think this game could be played with a total in the 30s.
And just why, like my final thing on the under, and I just said it, but it just feels like Kirby Smart respects Dabo. Even if Clemson is relative down and it's not the old Clemson, I think Kirby Smart is treating this one with more respect than, hey, we're just going to go out and smoke this team. Like, I think he's taking this game very seriously and knows like what Clemson is capable of. So that's why I land on the under. I just think it's more of a cagey affair. So let's move on. We kind of alluded to it early on, but Texas A&M Notre Dame from Kyle Field. A&M opened as an underdog in this game, but some of the injuries to the Notre Dame side has now moved this to where A&M is a 3-point favorite. Total has also dropped from 49 to 46.5. Cody, you get first word, because I think if you've been following this episode, I think everyone knows where I'm going to be leaning, but where do you stand?
Yeah, so I got a little bit cheeky with this, and I'm going Texas A&M minus 1.5 in the first quarter.
Okay.
So you talked about the offensive line injuries. I think Mike Elko is going to try to send a message defensively with Nick Skorton coming over from Purdue, and I think he's just going to blitz. I believe it's Anthony Knapp is the true freshman that's starting for Charles Stragusa on the left side. I don't see that matchup working well against Shamar Stewart or Skorton at all. And so I think he just gets after Riley Leonard continuously in this game. We saw Riley Leonard struggle last year at Duke when the offensive line started to get banged up. I think we're going to see a lot of that in the first half. All I need is a field goal from Texas A&M to cover this. And I just don't see Notre Dame scoring early in this game, particularly as they try to get comfortable in the offensive line. Cause the Jagusa injury just happened like what, 3 weeks ago. Like, they're still recovering from this. Oh, they're still trying to get their feet under them in that capacity. So I think that Texas A&M is going to be able to come out with a good game script. I trust Colin Klein a lot to, when you have these scripted drives in the first quarter, to put points up on the board. I have less faith in Notre Dame doing that, especially as there's turnover on that offensive staff as well, a new quarterback taking over. I just see a lot of ways where this game could go a lot of different ways in the last three quarters, but I think in the first quarter, the script really favors Texas A&M.
Yeah, I like A&M. I just took the 3. I think it's going to be an under affair as well. I think like low 40s for sure. This is going to look like an NFL game, I feel like. But I like Notre Dame. This isn't an anti-Notre Dame thing. This is more anti-week one on the road against a top 5 defensive line in the country. I think we need to kind of wise up to this Duke from last year, because this is a team I was – against last year, and I didn't necessarily believe in them as much. Riley Leonard, though, had a very good year before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. He also had two in-season and postseason, two total in the last calendar year, foot procedures. So what if his effectiveness is gone? Because what Leonard really thrived with at Duke was his ability to extend plays and play off script. If you just look at his overall passing numbers from last season, he completed 56% of his passes, three touchdown passes, three interceptions, four big time throws, six turnover worthy plays. This was not an offense that was chucking the ball around the yard.
No.
Against a really potent defensive line with a possibly compromised, should be dual threat quarterback, How's Notre Dame moving the ball on A&M in this game? I don't know where we're seeing them move the ball. I don't know if A&M is going to light up Notre Dame's defense because Notre Dame's defense is damn good themselves.
Yeah.
But I trust Colin Klein in this offense with Connor Wegman fully healthy. Le'Veon Moss is still really good running back. Wide receiver Noah Thomas. There's guys there. I think A&M is going to be able to get more scoring opportunities here. Play ball control, lean on their defense, and I think pull away from this game and win this one. So, again, I mentioned I like A&M to make the playoff. I think that this kind of jump starts it. And I think A&M, I think a pretty solid effort here. And, like, I think we come out of it, like, this is one of the talking points of, in leading into week two is, wow, A&M really, looks sharp against Notre Dame, and Notre Dame kind of struggling to really hold up against A&M's defensive line.
No, I think we see it the same. And, like, again, like I said with your college football playoff bet, I think that I maybe just have a little bit less trust in Connor Wegman at this point because we just haven't seen it. You know what I mean? But like that lack of trust, I think, leads me to just shy away from the full game. But I do think Texas A&M on paper looks like the better team, looks like the team I trust more going into this situation. And I think like that's why I'm targeting the first quarter is because I trust that script more. When things are on script, I definitely trust Texas A&M more to get it done.
Yeah, and Notre Dame, I mean, again, this has been an offensive line factory, but replacing three starters on the offensive line, one of them being the left tackle, Joe Alt, who, if you remember, nearly broke the chair he was sitting in. He's so massive. And went number five overall to the Chargers. So you're already playing from behind, replacing Joe Alt, and then you're the guy filling in for him. I'm knocking over my cup. I'm so nervous about this. But the guy replacing him just got hurt. So you're already on essentially your third string, or, you're underqualified too. It's just a tough spot, I think. This game, I think, is going to say more about A&M than it does about Notre Dame, because I do think Notre Dame, with the offensive line turnover, I think this is a team that's going to get better as the year goes on. They're going to need some time. This is just a brutal ask, in my opinion. So, I'm laying it with the Aggies.
No, and you just made a point I was about to – or you started making a point I was about to make. After this game, if it goes the way we see it and Texas A&M wins, I would try and fire on Notre Dame to make the playoff.
I'm interested to see where the market goes on them. Like, where are they going to be sitting after they start 0-1? Are they going to drop – I mean, Notre Dame, if you look at their odds, they are minus 170. They are the fifth choice, the fifth shortest odds, I should say, to make the playoffs. Are they going to fall to 2-1 plus 250?
And if they do, I'm fired on that. Absolutely.
Because what I think is interesting about this playoff market is some of these losses are baked into it already. You have much more margin for error. So maybe, sure, you don't want to lose games, but some losses you could bake into your calculus of how it's going to be at the end of the season that the odds makers might not be so fast. So yeah, no, I that will be something we will likely be talking about on Tuesday in our reaction to last week. The week gets started on Thursday this week with a full serving of games. And probably the most interesting one is Deion Sanders, Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter taking on North Dakota State, the FCS powerhouse. North Dakota State, a few changes, new coach, a few defensive players possibly banged up. But they traveled to Boulder to take on the Buffs. The Buffs laying 9.5, total of 59 in this one. Cody, how do you see it going on Thursday night? Is this the start of a resurgent campaign for Colorado after they went out with a whimper last year?
Both things can be true. I'm taking Colorado -9.5. I don't think it's the start of a resurgent Colorado. I think those are two very different questions. But when you look at what Colorado did last season and ending with a whimper, like you said, I think the big thing that that highlighted was something we talked about going into the season. Their depth just isn't there. They do not have a deep roster. They added reinforcements this year, but I still don't think the depth is there. But early in the season, I'm going to be in on Colorado because I think the top end of their talent is still impressive. Like, they improved the offensive line. You still have Shedeur Sanders. You still have a very good group of skill position players. The defense should be slightly improved, at least marginally. And then you look at this North Dakota State team for this game specifically. Like you said, there's injuries on that defensive side of the ball. I think Colorado is going to be able to put up some points in this, but the thing that really stood out to me with North Dakota State as I dug into it, their backfield is banged up. They're without Hunter Brosio, their starting fullback, who is a road grader given how North Dakota State likes to run their offense. He's out for the season. Their starting running back, Barika Kapinu, he is questionable for this game. He has a knee issue going on. North Dakota State is a team that is often just relied on their rushing attack, but if that's compromised against Colorado, that's going to give Colorado's defense more avenues to succeed before Colorado's defense gets fully banged up. We don't know if Shiloh Sanders is going to play in this game, but Shiloh Sanders is the worst of the two Sanders on the Colorado Buffaloes. Let's be very clear about that. So, like, that's not something I'm necessarily, you know, docking Colorado a ton for. I think that Colorado is just better positioned against North Dakota State. Like, we know who North Dakota State is historically. I think they've taken a step back in recent years from what they have been. Part of that is the FCS as a whole at the top of it improving around them. But I also think that with the coaching turnover we've seen with the Bison, I think that this team just isn't the powerhouse that we're used to seeing. They're still a very good FCS team, but I do think they have taken a step back. I think Colorado has taken a step forward, particularly early in the season. So I'm going to lay it with the Buffs, especially getting under 10.
Yeah. Now, the more maybe this game is set up for a Colorado showcase, but we'll see, because what really stuck out to me during the lead up to this game was Pac-12 media day, Big 12 media day. Sorry.
RIP, RIP Pac-12.
What stuck out to me was Deion Sanders talking about how, like, why are we getting such a tough game early? Like, it seems like he is aware that North Dakota State's a quality team and he has to have Colorado on its P's and Q's. Maybe that means that Colorado comes correct and they're going to show up and, you know, blow out this team, this FCS foe. What I see, though, is more of a buttoned up approach early in the game before maybe Colorado kind of blows this open late. So I don't hate the Colorado play the more I dive into this one and I think about it. But my pick is on the first half under 29.5. To me, we know North Dakota State, you mentioned it, Cody. They want to run the ball. They want to play keep away. They want to shorten this game as much as possible, keep Sanders on the sideline. What I also think about, though, is last year when Deion Sanders repositioned or reassigned offensive coordinator Sean Lewis, Colorado was playing at a frenetic tempo, top 10 in the country in terms of seconds per play. When Pat Shurmur took over as OC, they played on average 3 seconds slower per play over the last three games of the season. So I'm a bit curious, is Pat Shurmur, who comes from the NFL, is he going to be more pro style about this? Maybe we see more communication in the headphones, more talking like that. They want to slow this game up, because to me, the ingredients set up for maybe a cautious approach from Colorado. They're not going to come around treating this game like it's going to be a blowout. It seems like Deion is going to have this team ready to go, but that also to me speaks that they're not going to open it up so much early. It might be a little buttoned up quickly, and maybe there are a few punts early, and North Dakota State's maybe able to keep Colorado on the sideline a little bit. I just don't know if they're going to be fireworks early, so that's why I ended up on the first half under 29.5. I just think a lot of these avenues mean slow early, and then maybe it opens up a little bit later. So I think Colorado's probably good here, but I'm curious if it's going to be early or if it's like over time we see the depth of North Dakota State really start to show that it can't hang with the talent that Colorado has at the top.
I like this a lot. Honestly, like, I almost like first half under and full game over. Like, that's kind of how I see this game playing out a little bit.
You got to stick to the first half.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, I do like this first half under quite a bit just because exactly what you said about Pat Shurmur. And it goes back to exactly what I was saying about the depth. Like, that's why Pat Shurmur was handed the reins of the offense, because the depth that Colorado did not have last year, they brought in Pat Shurmur to be like, hey man, can we slow it down just a little bit so these guys can like not be completely gassed and like getting Shedeur killed late in the game. Like, that's what they had to bring him in to do. And so, like, I do see this Colorado offense being a lot more methodical than we saw at the beginning of last year.
Yeah, so under for me there. Interesting matchup. Before we get to two of our signature kind of picks, Let's go to Sunday real quick. A standalone game Sunday night in Vegas. LSU USC. Mm-hmm. The spread's been coming down. LSU now 4.5-point favorite. Were as high as 6.5 over the summer. Total of 63.5 on a fast track in Vegas. Two teams that very much underperformed last year. I know underperformed and LSU had the Heisman Trophy winner, but that was not what I think Brian Kelly had in mind for his 2023 season. Two teams that I think are really itching to get back out there and improve. Who do you think gets off to the best start?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think, like, if I had to pick a side in this game, I would probably go actually with USC, just because we saw LSU last year in this same kind of spot against Florida State, and they got caught. They got clipped, mm-hmm. and it kind of set the tone that maybe LSU isn't the upper echelon of the SEC of college football this year. I do think – I have a lot of faith in this LSU team, but my best play for this is the over, and it really comes down to the defenses on both sides of the ball in this game. A lot of changes on both sides of the with coordinators on both sides of the ball – or, excuse me, on the defense side of the ball for both teams. You got Blake Baker coming in for LSU. I have a lot of faith in Blake Baker coming over from Missouri to really remedy what was the biggest issue with LSU. Like, we know Jaden Daniels and the offense wasn't an issue, but the defense was. It was one of the worst in the country. Mm. I think Blake Baker will get that going. LSU obviously has a ton of talent on that side of the ball, but I still don't know if they have enough talent, particularly up front. I think the defensive tackle, interior defensive line, I think that's still lacking a little bit there. And I think that it may take a little while to gel under Blake Baker in regular season play. Same goes for USC with D'Anton Lynn taking over that unit. I think that it's hard to be worse than it was with Alex Grinch. That's a low bar to clear. But I do think for it to take its full form, we're going to see a little bit. I think the other big factor looking at this is the way to take advantage of USC is with their offensive line. That's still a big question mark for the Trojans. But again, I'm not fully confident in what LSU has up front. So I don't know if they're going to be able to take a full advantage of that. The other thing I'm looking at, Lincoln Riley, when he has a quarterback like Miller Moss, who he can, especially with the headset communications, this is a game I'm really looking for that. But I think if he can say, hey, Miller Moss, this is going to be open, looking at this pre-snap look, Miller Moss has the capability to just tear it up. I have a lot of faith in Garrett Musmeyer to do the same on the opposite side of the ball. I think this is just going to be a track meet, man. I think we're just going to see back and forth this entire game.
Yeah, it just feels like there's too many dudes on the field that can just rip off. Yeah. And I know LSU, they lose Daniels and Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers, and I get that. They're Kyron Lacy and CJ Daniels will be more than fine.
Yes.
Garrett Nussmeier is more than capable, in my opinion, of still playing at a high level. Maybe not Heisman Trophy level, but I think this LSU offense will be just fine. LSU, I think over the year, we'll see if their depth could hold up. I'm a little curious about that, but I think – especially at the offensive line, it's a bit shallow, but they should be good to go here. And again, both defenses may take step forwards. It's still week one, and it's still two premier offenses facing on a fast track where speed is going to kill in this game, and that's where the offense is going to shine. So I find myself also on the over. I've been going back and forth with what I like on the side, and I was like, you know what, let's bank on both teams to really just show up.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned it, because the more the line comes down, the more I'm like, man, maybe like LSU's being a little underrated here. It's still an SEC level team against a USC team that I think is still a step behind. Like, maybe this is not like, maybe this is a little too much love. But then I thought about last year against Florida State, where LSU looked completely outclassed. I know FSU ended up being a playoff team, but it kind of stuck with me. So I ended up on the over with you as well. Who do you think wins though?
I'm going to go with USC. I have more faith in the Lincoln Riley offense against a defense that I do not think is going to be up to snuff at this point in the season, at week one. Maybe I'm setting myself up for disappointment. I know you're the premier USC hater. So yeah. I'm sure you're probably leaning LSU, but I have a feeling that this is really kind of a make or break year for Lincoln Riley. Like, the pressure is going to be turned up if he doesn't deliver this year. I think he has a quarterback who I think is just being undervalued in Miller Moss. Like, I'm not trying to overreact to what we saw in bowl season last year, but he looked more than capable of running this offense. And more importantly, like you said, the dudes around him are going to carry him. Like, Miller Moss doesn't have to do a whole lot. He can get the ball in Zachariah Branch's hand and just say, go ahead, like, do your thing. And I think that's going to work a lot of wonders for this USC team.
Yeah, I kind of lean towards LSU, but I like if I'm betting on it, I don't know, USC probably with like the variance in the game could probably win, but LSU, I just I think that they're the better team now. I don't know. That'll be an interesting game. And another one, there's a few games where like it feels like you're going to learn a lot about these teams, and it feels like the seasons can maybe go in certain directions off of the game. This one feels like that. I'm interested to see how it goes. We now move to our very, very – I don't even know if it's profitable last year, but it was fun for us. Our underdog pick. So, Cody, I know we're both taking the money line. So let's just set the like precedent now for the rest of the season. When we're doing the underdog picks, this is like – money line, right? Like we're talking like obviously we think they're going to cover the spread, but we also like are implying like we think they can win outright, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. These are an underdog that we see value in that is live to absolutely win this game.
All right, so who do you got?
I've got Nevada against Troy after what I saw in week zero.
I like this pick.
Yeah, so I think the one thing we're underrating with Nevada, Nevada was one of the worst teams in college football last year. Their defense was absolutely atrocious. They could not stop the run to save their lives. And I think most people went into the SMU game thinking that's going to be the same thing. But we had coaching turnover this offseason. Jeff Choate came in and took over this as a former defensive coordinator at Texas. And I think we saw this defense really give SMU, with a great offensive mind in charge of it in Rhett Lashley, with an experienced quarterback in Preston Stone and another guy behind him who also had experience last year because Preston Stone was hurt, a really experienced late in the SMU team, have trouble scoring until late in that game where they kind of tired out. Now they're facing a Troy team who has also undergone a ton of turnover. They lost John Summerall, who I thought was one of the best G5 coaches that we had. You're bringing in Jared Parker, who we've not seen as a head coach before. We don't know what that's going to look like. The defense lost basically their entire defensive line. They were ravaged in the portal with the coaching turnover. I think that Nevada, particularly with what we saw from Brendan Lewis being a dual threat, I think they're going to give this Troy defense a ton of problems. Troy's offense was hit or miss last year on top of that, and I think that Jared Parker might have some trouble really getting things going early at Troy. I think this Nevada team is still not getting credit for what we saw on week zero, a very live team. And I think this Troy team is getting credit for what they did last year when this is a very different situation. So I plus 240 on the money line. I'm very confident in the plus 9.5 on the spread, but plus 240 money line, I think Nevada is very much live to make a statement in this game.
Yeah, I think week one, especially, you just don't know what you're going to get from these teams, especially a team like Troy, who is completely turned over. I think this is a really interesting setup. Where Nevada can maybe continue to outperform expectation and the market isn't necessarily getting this one correct. I mean, it adjusted down. It was 13.5. I think it was over 2 touchdowns, honestly, before. Yeah. Now, you know, you're inside 10, but is that correct? I mean, dogs barking right there.
That's when right. That's a good sign. Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. So mine is a bit more, I'm going to go a little bit higher here. So last year, before I get my bet, last year in week one, maybe I did it on this show, but I took Sam Houston State in their first FBS game to win at BYU on the road. They're like 7-1 underdogs. They did not win. They nearly did. They lost like 10-3 or something like that. 13-3 maybe. Couldn't move the ball. Couldn't score. So I'm going back to the same bet this year. And I think we're taking it home this time. I'm taking Southern Illinois, the FCS team, to go to BYU and beat the Cougars. Let's start with the Southern Illinois side. FCS Pro, they are a top 5 rated defense in terms of Bill Connolly's FCS ratings. This is a premier program in the FCS ranks. They actually beat Northern Illinois last year, so they have experience playing up in competition. This is a low total game. It's in the mid-40s. If you look at 3 years ago, they played BYU's defensive coordinator, Jay Hill. They played his former team, Weber State, put 31 on him. So they were able to score on this team. Maybe it was 30. They beat Jay Hill's team 34-31. So they put up 34 on them. They now face a BYU team that has not named a starter yet. I think it's more for competitive reasons, but I'm not really that excited about either between Jake Retzlaff and Jerry Bohannon, who's coming off a serious knee injury. So I'm not really that excited about either. I read a camp report that their offensive line is like still being sussed out to date. So we don't really know where it's going for BYU. This is an offense that's fallen on really tough times. They're facing a very good, stingy defense. If this is going to be a low scoring affair, hell yeah, I'm going to take the 2 touchdowns, but hell yeah, give me the money line. I could think for sure. We saw this BYU team struggle all year long. They have a low win total. They're facing a premier FCS defense. Yeah, I think that there's much more variance in this game. So give me Southern Illinois. What is it, the Salukis?
The Salukis, yes, sir.
The Salukis on the field to knock off BYU. I just think there's way – like we're talking variance and stuff. BYU might be much, much worse than this because we don't really know much about them right now. They're turning over a lot, and Retzlaff was there last year. He showed out against Oklahoma, sure, but in like a backup spark plug environment. If it's Jerry Bohannon, who even knows what he looks like anymore after knee surgery? Right. So, yeah, let's do this. Let's go Salukis.
I absolutely love this because you said, you know, we watched BYU struggle last year. They're going to struggle more this year. I think they're going to be in competition with Arizona State to be the worst team in the Big 12. I think those are clearly to me the two worst teams in the Big 12. So like I look at this, I see a Southern Illinois team that we've seen, you know, make some noise in the FCS recently, like in the past couple of years. They're bringing it back. I like their defense. And I think like, you know, the fact that I think the big selling point here is Southern Illinois is going to win if they win this game with their defense. And we have so many question marks about this BYU offense.
Yeah, let's go. Let's see if we get a hot start there. What do we got? Plus 240 money line and plus 530 money line. Let's do it.
Love it.
Our last one before we get out of here, our sickos pick. Cody, I'll let you do the honors first. Where are you going with our sickos pick for this week?
Yeah, I'm going to Bowling Green and taking -16.5 against Fordham. First off, let me go ahead and say this. And I think I saw on Twitter that you are also on this, but I like Bowling Green to win the MAC this year. I'm big on Bowling Green. I think that they return a lot of production, a lot of things that I want to see. But, you know, they're returning basically their three very key playmakers on offense behind an experienced and an offensive line that should be better. Connor Bazelak is back at quarterback. Tarion Stewart is back at running back. And Harold Fannin, their tight end, one of the better tight ends in the country.
Yep.
So I think that they're going to be able to move the ball consistently. We saw it last year. Their offense was much improved immediately last year, much better than we thought it was going to be, and it continued throughout the year. This is a team that knocked off Georgia Tech last year before Georgia Tech obviously went on to have a pretty decent season, make a bowl last year. So I think this Bowling Green team is live. Fordham is a quality opponent, don't get me wrong, from the FCS level, but Bowling Green traditionally has handled their FCS opponents and handled them well. I think Bowling Green just has the experience advantage. I think the defense is going to be able to come up with enough stops. You look at the secondary, which is largely back, and they also brought in some key transfers. They were opportunistic as hell last year. They were absolutely able to take away the ball. Fordham thrives on not making mistakes. Bowling Green is the type of defense that forces you into those mistakes. So I know it's a pretty hefty line at -16.5 against a good FCS opponent, but I like the Falcons in this one.
Yeah, really briefly on Bowling Green, it's their defensive line that really sticks out to me and why I think that they're going to be able to rise to the top of the MAC. This was a team, I mean, this is now like year over year. So it's not, you know, maybe the variance, but the regression bug comes from them at some point, but Scott Loeffler's defense, I mean, 21st in sacks last year at 33 on the year. They were 30th in EPA per pass, number one in turnovers gained, which is regression bound. They were top 20 the year prior too. So maybe this defense is just so aggressive that it pays off for them and that's their scheme. So yeah, I like Bowling Green and I can't hate this play because I think that you're going to see a big year from the Falcons. Mine, I'm going to go UMass -1.5 against Eastern Michigan at home. I'm not very high on Eastern Michigan as I was going through my preseason work. Eastern Michigan, arguably the worst bowl team ever last year. And then they lost 52-10, I believe, to South Alabama and their backups.
Yeah.
So Eastern Michigan was incredibly overrated last year. These two teams played last year in Eastern Michigan. UMass lost 19-17 in that game. In that game, UMass outgained them with their backup quarterback in. As I have to pull up the box score real quick because I have to get all these numbers in fact. But Eastern Michigan won this game in an incredibly fluky fashion, including on the final drive of the game, hitting a 50-yard touchdown. They were down five, and they needed a touchdown, obviously. They end up scoring a touchdown and beating UMass. Sorry, I'm saying this all wrong. They're down four. They score a 50-yard touchdown to walk it off in the final minute. UMass in that game with their backup quarterback outgained Eastern Michigan 340-157. They had four turnovers, two of which in the red zone to Eastern Michigan's one. I think UMass gets some revenge here. They're fully healthy. They are the far more talented team. They're at home. Give me the Minutemen all the way just to essentially win this game. If you look at last year also, part of the reason why I like UMass in this specific setup, they went to Las Cruces last year against New Mexico State. They were catching like over a touchdown. I want to say close to 10 points. They smoked New Mexico State in that game. What turned out to be a pretty decent New Mexico State team at that. They won 41-30. So it seems like with extra prep, Don Brown gets this team a little bit more motivated. I think they have plenty of motivation after that fluky loss last year to Emu. So give me UMass -1.5. Hell yeah.
You did a great sell job there. And I mean, like, it takes a lot of stones to week one be putting your money on UMass. So I love that for you.
Only
love
time
that.
To
do that's,
it.
That, yeah, you know, true sickos pick. But the thing you, that stood out to me, you know, UMass was playing with their backup quarterback. Now they have Tyson Fomichan back. And Tyson Fomichan, you know, didn't really cut it at the P4, P5 level. But I think for UMass, particularly playing a MAC defense that was hella overrated last year, I think he's going to cause them a lot of problems. Those turnover issues you were talking about, I don't see that happening in the red zone in this matchup. I think 1.5 is honestly disrespectful based on what I'm seeing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Great show. We tried not to ramble too much, and we kept this under an hour, so that's good work by us. Already off to a good start with producer Joanne. Cody, you want to run us off your picks before we get out of here?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start with the college football playoff. I like Boise State at +400 to make the CFP. Then I like this week Georgia. Do not like Clemson. I like Georgia -13.5. Texas A&M -1.5 in the first quarter. Colorado -9.5. The LSU USC over 63.5. I like Nevada +240 on the money line against Troy. Also +9.5 is a little bit safer play if you don't have the gumption to go after the money line. And then Seco's pick, give me Bowling Green -16.5 against Fordham.
Yeah, I love it. My CFP pick was Texas A&M to make the playoff +240. I took the under in Georgia Clemson under 49. Took A&M -3 at home against Notre Dame. Took the first half under 29.5 North Dakota State Colorado. I joined Cody on the over 63.5 on LSU USC. Southern Illinois Salukis, I think they're winning on the field +530 on the money line. And then my sickos pick is UMass -1.5 against Eastern Michigan. Cody, great show. Great to be back in the swing of things. Excited to see, you know, first data points, see how this goes. And I'm excited to chat with you next week, man.
Excited for it, man. It's going to be a good season. I'm ready for it.
Enjoy the games. We will be back same time next Tuesday at Stack in the Box College Football. Until then, enjoy the games. Happy football. We'll talk to you then.
Save big money on your next project now at Menard. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big.